Football Inquirer, Lane Kiffin has quit social media. Does that mean he's not going to see any clips from today's show? Come on. Do we really believe this? Plus, our Ross Dellinger sits down with SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. Would the SEC really break away? Or is that just something somebody says because there's not a lot of news? It's the first day of SEC Media Days, and they need to say something on SportsCenter. Who's to know? We'll talk about it today on the College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer. Greetings from Tampa, Florida. SEC Media Days. Ross Dellinger and I are together. Godfrey back in Nashville. Ross and I just got done talking to Lane Kiffin, who hasn't seen any of our tweets, apparently.
No. He's been off social for more than 2 months or so.
I love that he got back on in June to send one tweet to say he's been off since May.
Oh, did he do that? Really?
It was June 18th. He sent a tweet saying, oh, by the way, I haven't been on social media since May 11th.
And then he deleted the apps. Yeah. I don't know.
You guys are there. You guys are witnessing this live. I just want to make sure I got this right because I'm intercepting this. I'm going to be honest. Most of what I absorb is through Brett McMurphy's Twitter. He's just the best. He's faster than all of y'all. Sorry. Did he say he hasn't been posting or that he is not actively absorbing social media? Because the former, I believe... The latter I have a tough time with.
We got him before the big room, and Ross actually asked the question that produced a pretty introspective answer about it. He swears he doesn't even have the apps on his phone.
Yeah, he said he's deleted the apps at some point. Maybe it was after the June post, because I did ask him later after the little sit down. I'm like, well, how do you get your news? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's where he got a lot of his news. It's where a lot of people get their news. And he said Michael Bynatt, who's the longtime sports information director at LSU, prints out things for him.
Very analog.
And prints it out and leaves it on his desk. So I actually, Godfrey, I'm starting to believe, and Bynatt was right there, and he's like, I print out all this stuff for him. That he actually is, for a month maybe or so, not been on.
From a practical standpoint, understanding the job of a head football coach, certain recruits only communicate either through Twitter DM or Instagram DM. Yeah. So you're probably going to have it at some point where he's got burners.
Yeah.
But it does seem like he is somewhat unplugged. And he was talking about, so they were in Tampa and they went to a 5 a.m. workout somewhere in Tampa. And he noticed at the end of the class, everybody runs to their phone, starts scrolling. And he's like, this is pretty freeing. This is nice. And look, I got to admit, I feel that way sometimes because I have to use social media for my job. I would prefer not to. I used to be addicted. Yeah. And there was a time, I want to say about 3 or 4 years ago, when my wife got really mad at me. She's like, you're on this all the time. You're fighting with random strangers on Twitter. Why are you doing this?
The mortgage, baby.
Would you want our kids doing this?
Yeah.
And I was like, you kind of have a point there. So now I budget my time. Like, I am going to do Twitter for 2 hours today. And I'll respond to people and I'll mix it up.
But when you do the responding,
But when it's done.
I remember during COVID, that's when I sort of stopped responding to people. And I just kind of put a mandate of my own to no response at all to anybody on Twitter pretty much ever.
Wow.
During COVID, because COVID got just reporting all
the
COVID.
You're just
stuff
saying
off
this
the
is
field.
What this league is doing, and so people nasty. Think that's what you want to happen.
Yeah. But we spent about 10, 15 minutes with him in the private room, and then I spent another 10 minutes with him walking to the podium. And, whether you believe it or not, right, he's saying all the things that sounds like a coach who is trying to get focused on his actual job and not what's been his other job forever.
He was the most
forever.
Terminally online of these coaches because, like,
very
Nick
much.
Saban barely used his cell phone.
Right.
And Lane Kiffin, saw everything. Like, I just know from doing the job, but also just from paying attention to what gets retweeted or responded to that I do. Like, he'd see something I did and he'd respond to it. And, why did you see that? Like, you shouldn't see every single thing. And I don't know if he was Twitter searching his name, But there were times when it felt like he was.
Yeah.
There was a bar. I mean, the bar in the SEC, I think, was set in the early 20-teens by one Hugh Freeze, who very famously, and I think every college football writer has a Hugh Freeze story where he was actually, and I have this confirmed, searching his name once or twice a day when he would be in his office. And so if you had a comment or a story or whatever, he was going to find it. He was going to then reach out, and he was going to probably express his frustration, or just honestly, he was going to do, Andy, you touched on it, he was going to waste time. I think maybe there's a perception issue here with Lane Kiffin as he moves into a job that affords zero leeway, right? The scrutiny at LSU is intense. I'm going to be nice here.
Yeah, Brian Kelly was just ripped to shreds for the impression that he might have been playing golf once or twice.
Yeah,
exactly. And also, this is probably not an 11-win LSU team in Lane Kiffin's first season. So he's going to be on the bad side of social media, whether he likes it or not, 3-4 times, who knows, this season. So this feels smart. This feels like the right thing to do. It also is something I will absolutely short against if we're betting. All right. I am 100% shorting Lane Kiffin on social media, or not being on social media, I should say.
Yeah.
I say he'll be back before Halloween.
So he said his 16-year-old son Knox bet him he couldn't do it. And he said, that's the surest way to get me to do anything is say I can't. And I buy that. I also buy the Knox Kiffin saying, hey, dad, you're doom scrolling, quit it, because my kids will get on me.
Yeah.
If they see me doing it too much, they'll say something.
He mentioned something to me after the private room with everybody of Knox telling someone else that, hey, my dad is really on his phone too much. Like, I don't know what to do about this. And he sort of got advised to, like, we'll just go to him and say, stop, you know? Because, like, if there's anything that a parent is going to do, it is probably listen to their children, especially their young children, right? It kind of hits you in the heart a little bit. Yeah. I think Knox went with him like, hey, you need to stop and like pay attention more to, you know, me and family and whatever. So like, and you know, Lane went off about all of the things he's cut out of his life. We know about like the alcohol.
Yeah.
And he mentioned, quote, toxic relationships.
Yeah, that was
cut out of
too.
His. Yeah, that was indeed. And so all no these comment. Things he's eliminated from his life, helping him sort of get through life better or move through life better. Yeah. And this is another one, I guess, is what he's saying.
Well, it was interesting. Oh, go ahead, Gabri.
If this holds and it's true, just if. This is the best possible thing that you could want or receive as an LSU fan. Because, like, let's take all of this sort of, I'm not going to be snarky for a second about Lane Kiffin. His ability, his acumen, like his pure football coach profile was hampered by his innate ability to self-sabotage.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to write his biography tomorrow, it's a series of moments where he shoots himself in the foot almost purposefully, right? Almost deliberately to stand in the way of success that he doesn't know how to process. This social media or sort of self-involvement was kind of one of the last things he was holding on to, because you guys mentioned he's been sober for a while. He's, let's say diplomatically, relatively more stable in his personal life, right? He's not who he was at Alabama. He's not who he was at Tennessee or the Raiders or any of these other places. If you're an LSU fan and you take this at face value and it holds, I think you see a more focused football coach, Lane Kiffin, that's the best possible thing that you could hope for. This would be great news. It's whether or not it sticks, because this is so intrinsic to who he is that circus mentality of self-sabotage.
I think the adjective that best describes Lane Kiffin is self-inflicted. So it is.
I wonder if he has a therapist. I'm not joking. I'm not joking. Yeah, I'm saying no, like, this feels
like something we're going to hear about eventually.
This feels like post-therapy behavior.
I think he did a little therapy with Ross today, because he mentioned something in the big room about something he said to Ross, which as a reporter, it hurt my heart. When he said, I said this to Ross Dellinger just 5 minutes ago, and I'm like, oh no, he's going to tell the whole world what Ross had by himself.
Yeah. A private conversation that I exclusively had. Yeah, that's great. But it was really interesting. It was about, you know, everybody in life, and I think this is true. We talked about it earlier, Andy, like everybody in life has the person who dies and they realize, oh, It's a reminder of, oh, we do. We all die at some point. Yeah. So should I be living differently if I know this is definitely going to end? And for him, it was Hulk Hogan. And then, of course, both of his parents back-to-back years. And I had the conversation with him. And you just
did he say Hulk Hogan?
He said there were two people who he thought would never die, his dad and Hulk Hogan. And they both died in fairly... You know, fairly close to one another.
Right. So when Hulk Hogan died is when he thought like, man, maybe I should like change the way I'm living because I've realized at some point I'm going to die. Yeah. Because I never thought Hulk Hogan would really die. Like he's this invincible man.
Yeah.
You know, never thought he was going to die. But yeah, okay.
I've got one like that. Yeah. I was telling Ross, I have one like that too, Godfrey.
Yeah, so, I do
so
too.
What is my personal one, I lost my mom in 2006. So that was sort of like, just a very, it's still the worst moment of my life. And cause she was the most important person to me growing up and she was by herself for a while with me. And so like that fundamentally altered my life, but that everybody's got that with a parent. But for me, it was weird because no other death ever affected me that much. And certainly no celebrity death, but there was a Saturday morning a few years ago when I woke up and found out Jimmy Buffett had died. Mm. And it was the strangest feeling because again, no celebrity death had ever affected me in any way, shape, or form. And like that day, I could not process. I'm like, I never thought I would exist in a world that Jimmy Buffett was not a part of. Like, and it was weird because again, I lost a parent when I was in my 20s, but I'm in my 40s and I'm just like, I can't deal with this. And a lot of people have that person for them.
Yeah. So, I don't know that I had like a celebrity as much as when Robin Williams, if anybody, Robin Williams died, I remember that impact, you know, making me think very differently. But personally, 4 years ago, I had an aunt at 48 die of COVID.
Oh,
and I remember that was like sort of a reminder of we do die. Am I living like I should be, you know, YOLO?
Yeah.
YOLO, Godfrey, who's your person?
I don't know. Hang on.
It's really
I
grim be, topic, by the
it's,
way.
It's Ric Flair,
really
isn't it?
Grim topic.
Ric Flair too well.
Rick. Yeah. Let me tell you something about, I do know Rick. It's a story for another time. Rick's going to put us all in the ground. Be rest assured of that. Okay. at the end of this earth, it's Keith Richards and Ric Flair sharing a cigarette, wondering where everybody is. All of this, again, is positive behavior and a representation of a positive self-examination from Lane Kiffin, which interests me so much more than the football part of this, because again, I really am fixated on the concept of an overachiever against the index of your field. And that's definitely what he is. Like I think of him almost as an offensive savant. I don't know if he's the greatest program manager in the world. I think history would say he's probably not, but you can see glimpses of genius in Lane Kiffin. But at the end of the day, boys, whether LSU is 7-0, 4-3, whatever happens this year or happens next year, the referendum on Lane Kiffin is that he is stuck with himself. And I mean this, like if things are positive and things go well and we see a changed man, at the end of the day, can he live with himself? Because that has been the real unbeatable rival for Lane Kiffin is managing himself. And so this is a longer term play of evaluation, but I'm not going to be snarky for a second. He's saying the right things. I tend not to believe anything that's said at SEC Media Days.
Right.
But this is a good foot forward, right?
Well, and with Lane, you do take everything with a grain of salt. But let's hypothesize here. Like, imagine there was a situation with Lane Kiffin that didn't end badly. Yeah, seriously.
Well, imagine there is a situation at LSU football that didn't end badly.
Yeah.
Somebody was mentioning to me, well, how do you, somebody came up to me who covers LSU and said, all right, so how do you think he's going to do career-wise at LSU? I'm like, I think he's going to do really well and have a lot of success. The bigger question is, how is it going to end? Because at LSU, it mostly always ends really poorly.
Yes.
And they fired eight of the last nine coaches, and a lot of them ended really bad and ugly
Well, and the one they didn't fire died in a plane crash.
Yeah.
Like it's scary. Like,
The other one eventually left for a rival.
Right, right. I mean, that's the craziest part is, you know, this is – his history says this will burn bright and burn out because that's how things go with Lane Kiffin. But maybe at a certain point, he does fully mature And what if it just goes well?
Yeah, maybe.
if all of this happens at the Louisiana State University, it would be the greatest of ironies, because one of the things that we know about the history of this program, the history of the state of Louisiana, Ross and I are big fans of getting into this stuff, is how inconsistent and self-sabotaging that culture is and that program. And, you know, Ross, you were joking, but to lose Nick Saban the way they did and see Saban install maybe the greatest consistent run in the history of college football at a rival, that's what LSU has always longed for. You go back to the 90s when they were in complete disrepair in the DiNardo era before Saban got there. LSU knows that it has the blueprint to be among the absolute best in this sport, but it, you know, over a long enough trajectory of evaluation, they fail, right? They get in their own way. There's corruption. There's a circus sideshow, right? So for Kiffin to maybe round into form of not even being his best coach, but being his most consistent self, is what LSU needs more than anything.
Yeah. I mean, and I can't, Godfrey, you mentioned it earlier, if you're an LSU fan and you hear that Lane Kiffin is off of social media, it's, I know you probably love to see his tweets and what he was thinking at all times, but it is probably the best news for your football program in many months or years, right?
Because he's probably thinking about third and six.
I asked him, how are you filling in your spare time? Because think of all the time that he spent hours a day on social. And yeah, he said, I mean, mostly like working, mostly in the office, mostly in meetings and whatnot.
Football bores him sometimes. I'm curious if that, and I know that's a bold statement, but I've talked to so many people who have worked for him at different stops and people who have had to cover him on beats. He's not one of these other coaches. Andy, like, I think you can back me up here. Like, he's not ball coach brained. I'm curious, right? Like,
it's not a meathead.
With all this available, by the way, nothing against meatheads. Like,
no, some of our favorite people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, with all of this available mindfulness, where does it go? So I'll take him at face value for, I think I took the under at October, and we'll come back and have this conversation after their first or second loss and see how present and mindful he still is.
We shall find out. I am taking the under. I think he's probably winds up back in
October.
He's going to be
getting
people
what?
On social. Maybe September. I don't know that. Well, listen.
Hey,
I think he gets through Ole Miss week. I think probably gets through Ole Miss week.
It's easier to be consistent like Nick Saban was in 2010 or 11 than it is to be consistent like Nick Saban was in 2007 when you're losing to Louisiana Monroe. I'm not saying he's going to have that type of season, but I am saying it's going to be incredibly bumpy with this roster relative to expectation for one, if not two seasons before the wheels really get going.
Yeah. Well, one thing that is incredibly consistent is Ross Dellinger.
There we go. There's a transition.
And his relationship with SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. Because Greg's going to tell Ross what he really thinks. Yeah. And I am happy to have this discussion next, because earlier this week, Godfrey texts us and he's like, hey, we forgot on Tuesday to talk about this SEC breakaway thing. And I'm like, we talked about it. We talked about it back in Destin. There's really nothing new. And Godfrey's like, but they talked about it on the SportsCenter and everybody's talking about it. And I'm like, okay.
Yes.
So I guess we got to have that conversation. Well, fortunately, in the meantime, Ross has had that conversation with Greg Sankey. So we're going to talk about it next. We are back at the College Football Inquirer. And Ross, you had a sit down with Greg Sankey this week. And you asked him about a topic that blew up again this week, the idea of the SEC breaking away from the NCAA. And you and I had a very extensive discussion. I think it was a day that Godfrey wasn't on the show. You and I had a very extensive discussion when we were in Destin together at the SEC spring meetings. It is something the SEC internally people talk about.
Yeah.
But how close is it to an actual, like, hey, we're going to go do our own thing?
Yeah, let's like lay this out. There are two paths to two breakaway paths, I'd say. There's a governance breakaway path where the SEC would make its own rules and enforce those rules and still play everybody else competitively and still play in the college football playoff and the NCAA championships. And then there's a second path that we've heard from like Georgia's president, Jerry Moorhead, talk about a lot, which is a breakaway, not just from governance breakaway, but also competitive breakaway and only playing themselves.
Oh, no, hold on. Actually, John, hold on one second. So this is everybody. John Daly, say hello.
Woo pig, baby.
On the table for these guys. I don't know what's going on.
Woo pig.
John,
let's
John,
go.
Can I get you right here? Can I get you right here? Thanks, buddy. Sorry.
We were in the presence of greatness.
I know. How about that?
John's going out to smoke cigarettes.
He's got a pack of Marlboros. You don't know how bad I wish he was smoking.
Brad, we got to leave all that in.
Oh, yeah. We're leaving all of that in.
It stays into the pod.
Ladies
mid-pod interruption from John Daly.
If the audience is unaware of who that is, that is the Chancellor of the University of Arkansas, John Daly.
Okay, before we get back to the SEC and breaking away, earlier in the day, I walked past the tail, and John's here with a radio station from Arkansas. Uh-huh. He's doing a show with them, and our On Three table was next to that, and so there's a lady sitting at the table, and she's wearing a hat with the logo of the Bearded Pig on it, and the Bearded Pig is the best barbecue restaurant in Jacksonville, Florida, and they have a great hat. My son actually has the same hat that she was wearing. And I said, oh, Bearded Pig, love that place. And she's like, oh, I've never actually been there. I wear the hat because I'm John Daly's wife and he's my Bearded Pig. I was like, oh my God, what if I walked? But the funniest part was before she said that, I didn't realize he was sitting there talking at the table next door.
Yeah.
And I look at my friends from On Three and I go, oh my God, that's John Daly. And she's like, yeah, that's my husband.
Yeah. I'm so afraid to yes and that Amazing. Story.
What a great interruption. So we were talking about college sports governance and interrupted by John Daly.
Yep.
And there's your first president of the Super League walking by.
Yeah, that's right. We're staring at like a harbor, Andy and I are. Yeah. We're staring at Harbor Island, right?
Yes,
Harbor Island.
So yes.
John is smoking a Marlboro and looking out at Harbor Island now on the patio out here. All right, let's get back to governance. Okay. Real fun governance.
I'm going to have to let John Daly back in when the cigarette's over. So
two breakaways, right?
Yeah.
Just from the governance perspective and the breakaway from a competitive perspective. Greg Sankey didn't want to do either one of those.
Right.
He's been clear. He doesn't want to do any either breakaway, but he definitely doesn't want to do the competitive breakaway. And he's told the presidents that. He's told the athletic directors that. However, he works for them. And I think probably a good portion of the athletic director room in the university president room wants to explore both of the paths. Mm-hmm. And they have been exploring seriously the first path, which is the governance breakaway. And people are probably listening to this saying, well, why would they break away? Like, how is that going to help? Well, it's going to help because they believe they can avoid all these antitrust lawsuits by establishing and governing a smaller subset.
Yeah. So they can say, hey, we have our own rules. If you don't like them, you're welcome to participate with the other people who have different rules.
It's legal term is market power. And the NCAA has obviously market power. It has over 1,000 schools in it. And the SEC would have 16. Now, there's an argument that the SEC, which has had, I think, Andy, 40 or 45% of college football viewership was the SEC.
It's close.
That has market power.
Well, what's keeping the SEC and the Big Ten from just merging is they literally would have market power.
Right,
They understand they would lose antitrust suits at that point.
So the idea is that they, from a governor's perspective, they break away, establish their own rules, and the rules would be on eligibility. It would be, you know, the five.
I got to let John Daly in. Hold on.
John spit a lot.
Oh my God. I thought it was a bit. And, you're serious about this.
Is he really?
He was really burning one, Ross?
Yeah. What? Dude. What? You thought I was joking?
Andy, ask him, is he still smoking Reds? Ask him if he's still smoking Reds.
Are you still smoking
John.
Reds?
Mediums.
Mediums. He's smoking mediums
my
now.
Man. Okay. Yeah.
What are you boys talking about?
We're talking about you a little bit. You know, you interrupted our boring conversation.
You didn't interrupt anything.
No. You interrupted.
You were an honored guest.
What's the deal with that?
They called the line ever since I kicked field goals at Elias High School. Wow. We got a team that got canceled. They canceled the football program. Rockbridge was like three class A's ahead of us. We were just a small school. And they were playing. So we went on my field goals. We beat them. That's the year we went 12-0. And 86 or 85. Yeah. No, 80. Geez, 82, 83 or something. Yeah.
What about the Hogs this year? What do you think?
We're all just kind of hoping. You know, it's been tough. But I think Coach Silverfield, he's going to get something done. So.
John, And how often you golf nowadays?
Not as much as I want to. These injuries. I got a arthritis and a bursitis in my right shoulder. I had an MRI done out. Couldn't play Sunday at Akron. Just rested. I'm going to do an outing in Palatka on the 28th and see if I can swim.
So, John, I met your wife, and she's wearing a Bearded Pig hat. Best barbecue place in Jacksonville, by the way.
It's good.
I said, you got to get there. She said, oh, I've never been there. He's my Bearded Pig. That's
well, it's really cool because Fuzzy used to call me Pig, you know, all the time, and he gave me that hat just to say that you are the Bearded Pig.
Oh, that's Fuzzy Zeller gave me. Oh, wow.
No, they gave me that hat.
Oh, okay.
The Bearded Pig people did, but Fuzzy always called me Pig because I love the hog so much.
Give my beard care tips.
Appreciate it, John.
Nope. All right. Wow. Damn.
All right. Wow.
Guess what, boys?
I don't even know what to think. I don't even know what that just did.
That was the impossible. I actually wish I was there now.
Yeah. There you go.
I thought we were lying that he was burning one.
Oh, no.
Outside.
No, he's been burning one. He's been back and forth all day. Yeah.
I thought you were putting a little like English on it as an aside, and he really was.
My man is
smoking medium still.
For any of you ex-smokers out there, if you know, you know.
That is dedication to the craft. That man's going down as a Marlboro consumer.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. So back to Greg Sankey.
Yeah.
Talk
about one person to another. John Daly and Greg Sankey.
That's the next season of True Detective.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It would be amazing. Time is a flat Marlboro. The quote he gave you was pretty funny.
Which one?
About the breakaway.
Oh, yeah. If there's any headlines that say that we're breaking away, they're uninformed, basically, he said.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of headlines on Monday of that. And look, I think the SEC is and has been serious about the governance breakaway. And I think they will do the governance breakaway if a revised Senate bill doesn't pass. I think they will. I think they'll establish their own eligibility rules. I think they'll establish their own transfer rules. I think they'll establish their own cap potentially on athletes. Mm-hmm. And they think that they can get out of a lot of the lawsuits because they're a subset of a group of schools and don't have market power.
Here's my question. This is because I wrote a column about this right after the meetings in Destin because my bosses had said, okay, what would that look like? And the biggest problem I see is you can no longer good cop, bad cop. The NCAA is no longer the bad cop. You are the literal cops. If you are the ones that make the rules and you're the ones expected to enforce the rules. So when Ole Miss, when LSU, when Kentucky, when Tennessee, when they are not happy with the decision you've made, are they going to take you to court?
Yes.
Now, here's a more likely scenario. Let's say, because in the SEC, you've probably got a membership agreement that says you don't go to court. Yeah. You go to arbitration. Is the Tennessee Attorney General going to take them to court on behalf of the University of Tennessee?
Right.
Now, this whole thing sounds terrifying. It sounds like a Stanford prison experiment.
Yep.
So, you know, Greg's background is compliance, right? He was a compliance officer for years and years at the school and then the conference level, very much so. And I asked him, how difficult will it be to enforce your rules upon member schools? And he looked at me and he just said one word, very. Mm-hmm. And then I asked the natural follow-up of why. And he went into detail about some things that the SEC in a lot of conferences, Andy, used to do. This is an old model. I mean, all the conferences had this model.
This was what they did.
Yeah, up until about 25 years ago when Greg Sankey joined the SEC as an associate deputy commissioner with Slive. Mike Slive wanted him to take the title of enforcement, and Greg Sankey said, nope, I'm not taking that title. And they changed the title. I believe they changed the title.
At the time, the SEC had its own investigator.
Right.
And if you remember back the Albert Means case with Alabama, and then Philip Fulmer was involved in all that. And that was a good media day. The whole situation where Philip Fulmer got served a subpoena. It was crazy, but that is what it used to be like in every conference.
Yeah, for sure. And then everybody just kind of like, because it was so difficult, right? It began to be so difficult to enforce penalties on your members. They said, you know what? Let's go get the NCAA.
Yeah, let's make them
to do all this. Yeah. And that's what's been happening. And obviously, the NCAA, because it represents such a large group, has gotten a little bit of hot water.
It is difficult, extremely, but what that move allowed the conferences to do was to create a straw man within their membership to where you can constantly blame any development in compliance on an 100%. Outside party.
100%. Even though they voted for all the rules.
Hey,
in the NCAA.
Dude, it's a hell of a magic trick. It really is. Yep. I want to take this back because I brought this back up in offline, when we're not filming the show. Because everything that we're discussing here, you guys keep referencing what happened in the meetings in Destin, not what happened this week at the SEC Media Days. I am not trying to be aggressive and pick on members of the media, but I brought this back to you guys because you guys are neck deep in this all the time, right? The public posture this week across all of sports media, like I wish you guys could have seen it away from Tampa, was that the SEC has opened media days talking about secession. And the reason why, I'll start here and I'm going to be diplomatic, Andy, I'll play nice, was because there were several segments anchoring the major sports centers of that day. Opening day was Tuesday or Monday, whatever day it was. That this was a headline topic specifically emanating from Tampa. Now, what I'm trying to do for the benefit of our audience is explain how a news item that has not had any new news in months has recycled and why it – and I'm trying to explain the why and the how to people because the feedback I'm getting in the real world when I go do non-sports media things is the SEC going to make their own NFL? Like that's what the common person is hearing or thinking they're hearing right now.
Right, right. Well, and that from a competitive standpoint, right? Yeah. You talk about the two breakaways. That is the competitive breakaway is that they would go and have their own playoff, right?
Yeah.
And then several administrators in the league, look, you guys both know tons of SEC athletic directors. And for, I'm guessing, a better part of 4 or 5 years, most of that room has wanted to do their own thing. Yes. Like most of that athletic director room has wanted to say, let's have our own playoff. Forget about everybody else.
Yep.
Now, I think at least things have changed a bit. It's easy to say that when you won 13 of 18 national championships
so
in football.
Now.
Not so easy now. And now you hear the discussion in the room is, well, we should still go do our own thing competitively, but maybe our champion plays the Big Ten champion.
Yeah.
Also, the end of the year.
Also they know there's more money in whatever Super League is next, and they're not going to forfeit that. They're not going to break away and risk. You know, you could win the whole thing and be the Super League, or you could really mess up. So I think
why are we talking about why are we having to reiterate to the audience that this isn't new? Why has this happened?
I think people asked Greg Sankey about it, which gave an entree to answer the questions the same way as he did in Destin, and then they just recycled it.
Yeah.
There wasn't much going on day one of SEC Media Days, you know?
Well, and let's keep in mind, too, I think this week specifically, it's an important story or a noteworthy story because of what's going on in Congress, because I think the decision on a breakaway from a governance standpoint is all contingent on this Senate bill, which, by the way, they have been bunkered, the lawmakers and staff, now for like 3 days. And I would guess Thursday they're going to be bunkered again, trying to hash out actual revised text for a bill. And I believe the SEC and Big Ten, we are close to agreeing to some of these revised provisions. Will it be enough to get their vocal and public support? Kind of remains to be seen, but if they do get that, then you're looking at before the August recess, before the lawmakers break for a month. They do that August 7th. Mm-hmm. There's two more weeks in the Senate calendar. Can the bill then get to the floor? That's sort of the big question right now. But they're closer, it feels like, than ever of getting the support of the SEC and Big Ten for the bill.
Or Tommy Tuberville is about to mount his most successful campaign since 2004.
Yeah, exactly. I still don't know how they can satisfy the Big Ten and the SEC without then losing the other group that was heavily favored in the original text of the bill. So I just that part I can't wrap my brain around. So we'll see. It would be quite a diplomatic feat if you ask me. But we'll have plenty on that in the next couple of weeks. When we come back, I have a question for Godfrey based on something that Nick Saban said on Wednesday, and it fascinated me because I need to know how Godfrey feels about this, because if Godfrey's changed his mind on this, it may be that this is the thing that needs to happen. We'll talk about it when we come back. are back at the College Football Inquirer. Very interesting comment from Nick Saban on Wednesday. He was on the SEC Network set, and they were talking about a bunch of different things. They started talking about scheduling. And Nick Saban said that he, as a coach, a former coach who had to motivate players, but also as a consumer of the sport now, a fan who watches football, would prefer if the Power Conference teams played 12 Power Conference opponents. Just play amongst each other, not all games within the conference, but nobody schedules an FCS team, nobody schedules a Group of Six team, just all Power Conferences, which essentially would be a super league. It would be 68 teams, I believe, because Notre Dame would be involved in this, whatever that was, and the ACC, Big 12, Big 10, and SEC. And so, Godfrey, Ari and I were talking about this on the On 3 show.
Before you ask him, yeah. Let's be honest, this is happening already. It's just slowly. It's happening. They're adding more conference games. They're stopping playing FCS. It's a slow crawl.
You have certain Big Ten coaches like Kurt Cignetti saying, we don't need to schedule hard non-conference.
I think all that's going to change. Yeah. I just think over time. Now, I'm not saying next year.
And you have SEC coaches saying, why are we doing this, too?
I think in 10 to 12 years, because of the money that would be involved, in 2036, 2038, this happens.
These TV deals all cycle through.
I do.
From your lips to God's ears, because I think that would be an incredible TV product. I think as a quote-unquote Super League goes, that is a palatable Super League to me because it leaves enough of the fabric of the sport intact. And that's why I wanted to ask Godfrey about this, because we were talking about this on the On 3 show, and Ari goes, what does Stephen Godfrey think about this?
What a terrifying question. Let me start by saying that I'm interested in seeing, I'm surprised by seeing Saban's posture change on air, because since he's retired, he's been very much a sort of traditionalist and an alarmist about things that are changing in college sports. And the way he phrased his statement was, well, as an entertainment product, that's a pretty fundamental change from the way that Nick Saban has been addressing the sport the last couple of years. I find that interesting. Maybe he's accepted that his era, he is sort of post his era, and now he just wants to be more of a consumer of the sport. So here's what I did to answer the question. I took my longtime colleague, Bill Connolly, I took the SP Plus rankings. There's going to be two sets of rankings here, but it's going to be very easy if you're just listening along. You don't need to get out a pencil and paper. So what we're essentially talking about is walling off the Power Four leagues plus Notre Dame. Gentlemen, that's 68 teams, okay?
Right.
The idea being that what we're really looking for is getting rid of the, you know, the Georgia blowout of Louisiana Monroe in mid-November, okay? Right? Here's the problem with this. We don't ever want to acknowledge or actually legislate any fluidity in affiliation in college sports, which is a fancy way of saying we're never going to have promotion and relegation.
Right.
But if you suss it out this way, you wall it off. Here's what this is the interesting part of what you're gaining and what you're losing. Okay. In the preseason SP Plus, where everything from transfer classes to high school classes to preseason prognostication, all that filters into Bill's ratings. He has four teams in the Group of Six that are rated higher than 68. I'm going to do this very fast. New Mexico, Navy, UNLV, and Boise. He has four teams that are below 68. Syracuse is just on the cut line at 69. I want to acknowledge that. But then you get into some straight dog-ass rosters. Boston College, Stanford, and the Purdue Boilermakers of the Big Ten are 82nd. Okay? Wow. So here's the other rub. If you just go by on-field performance, the last SP rating that Bill put out after the season, just the toe meets leather football, 18 teams from outside of the Power Four finished above 68.
Right. So this is where I was getting at, because I asked you, what was that like in 2010? Because I imagine there were even more in 2010 that were above the Power Conference line.
From what I was able to pull from Bill, it's not significantly more, but keep in mind we have a Power Five rubric and we have a nucleus of teams minus Boise that were American schools that were causing this problem. So you're talking about Central Florida's and Houston's and Cincinnati's and that kind of stuff, right? So this is my response to Ari as we walk through the liminal space between podcasts. I don't hate the idea. I hate the rubric of using conference affiliation because, Andy, on the show Tuesday, we talked about the bottom of the Big Ten being significantly worse. I have given you three ACC teams that are below two Mountain West teams entering this year. So mm-hmm. my solution to this is let's take Saban at face value, but rather than use conference affiliation, we need to install a metric that would become the equivalent of RPI or net. So at the end of every year, you are 1 through 68, and then you mm-hmm. schedule according to that. Now, you can keep your conference affiliation. We're not going to get involved in the courts. And I understand some of this is Pollyanna.
But you're going to get, you're going to get more money if you're being scheduled by the big boys. Godfrey, honestly, this is, once again, and I know we bring this up a lot, and our producer Brad's a big soccer guy, and I know people get sick of hearing about it.
Yeah.
If you did this with promotion and relegation, where the top four of the next division down could move up, and the top six of the next division down could move up, and the bottom six of the other one would move down, I would say do it tomorrow, because it would be a phenomenal television product. It would be interesting at the top. It would be interesting at the bottom. There would be fluidity. People could change their fortunes. The problem is, it's never been a concept in American sports, and I don't think you can. These guys who want their budgets to be set and fixed 10 years out, I just don't think they're gonna go for it.
One more piece of data to take it on the entertainment value. With my Phantom Island co-host Ryan Nanny in the office, we looked up the top 100 college football games of last season by television rating alone. I want mm-hmm. to acknowledge that this is a very flawed metric, but let's play the game anyway.
Yeah.
Those group of teams that I talked about drew audiences. Now, Army-Navy is an outlier because of the magnitude of that game for non... So let's throw that out. But then you see Tulane in a college football playoff. You see James Madison. You expect that. But both Boise and New Mexico's bowl games broke the top 100, okay? The other one is San Jose playing Texas just because of the time slot early in the season.
Yeah, an arch. Yeah,
quality, quality draws interest. So my ultimate response to Ari is let's create a 68 rubric. Let's block it off, or 70 or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're Charles Huff in Memphis, you have to be involved in this conversation, maybe at the expense of Barry Odom and Purdue. If you can't get off your ass and get out of the 90s, in an objective metric in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
I would love it. If you really could move up and down, mm-hmm. I would absolutely love it. I just don't, I have no faith in these people to do that.
The problem is it's kind of what always prohibits anything like this, is that the people at the top have the control and they don't want to lose it.
The one thing I wonder though, Ross, is like at some point could that be the negotiating point that stops an antitrust suit? That allows
what's really funny to move forward. What's really funny is what's going on with the bill and the things that the SEC and Big Ten doesn't support, right, is this pooling, consolidation of rights, which is sort of a step in the direction of maybe at some point doing that, right? And they don't want to do it, right? They're pushing back
so much.
Yeah, they're pushing back so much that Congress had to add in language to make sure that they know they're not going to be forced into doing this, or they're not going to be sued into doing the pooling. So they are pushing back against this concept so hard.
But I want to go back to Tuesday. We talked about Eli Drinkwitz's comments, how he opened up SEC Media Days. He was critical of Indiana's national title schedule. Indiana's worst opponent last year in conference was 82nd ranked Purdue, according to these numbers. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the fact that they played a good Kennesaw State and a good Old Dominion team, okay? Now, I want to take Eli's comments one step further. He would then go out and complain this year if UNLV was coming to Bloomington, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas they've got to deal with Purdue, who's a lower-ranked team. Scheduling intent, I think, is a beautiful concept if we're being sort of naive and pure, but objective measurement of these programs – and also scheduling within a reasonable amount of time, Andy, not scheduling 12 years out necessarily, finding teams that are hot. Yeah. This would reward everyone. And yes, does it make it harder to dig out? A little bit. But this is the way we should be objectively. And here's the deal. Eli Drinkwitz, who I've been picking on, or anybody else, they know football. Would Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri rather schedule a 1-1 with Purdue right now and get the acclaim of beating a Big Ten team? Or would he rather schedule one of his old employers, Boise State, and fight nail
Purdue all day, every day? Yep.
Okay.
I agree.
Boise's, by the way, but Boise's 39th in the preseason SP+. That's a real football team.
Go Spencer Danielson. Damn.
Yeah. That's impressive. Turns out you can care and be good at college football without having a Tiffany brand beside you.
Well, I mean, they do have a blue field, just like the blue box. It's almost the same color.
Well, I mean, I think Tiffany isn't necessarily a color, but we're probably all unqualified.
Oh, Tiffany very much considers their blue a color.
Tiffany blue, got it. Come on. Oh, wow, I got educated. Damn.
Yeah.
Somebody's been shopping
for
jewelry.
We're sorry, Mrs. Yeah. Godfrey. We know how things go at your house now.
No. Damn. Oh, wow.
Sorry. I could not help myself. But no, I think if I were to Pollyanna, pie in the sky, ideal world for me, because you and we always talk on this show about just get to the next thing, figure it out, whatever the next thing is, and let's go. It would be, and me and Ari actually came up with this, Godfrey. We're going to grandfather in Oregon State and Washington State. We're going to make the Big 12 take them to bump it up to an even 70 teams. And that's it. But with promotion and relegation, like that would be the ideal thing. Like bottom five go down, top five go up. It's the Premier League and the championship.
In fact, Boise, I believe, had this model. I think they end up going public with it maybe 2 or 3 years ago. You know, some people at Boise, they had this model of relegation and all this stuff. And it was cool. They laid it out and it was great. It was a lot like the Premier League and it would be a blast. It also would be rejected by the people.
Yeah, if you're Purdue, there's no way you're ever agreeing to this. Yeah. If you're anybody who might be relegated. Yeah. And the craziest thing is it already existed when English soccer did it. So they were just carrying it over. Right. So they weren't worried about antitrust concerns. Yeah. But it's crazy because their fortunes have changed so much. Like nobody, when they did it, would have ever imagined that Tottenham Hotspur would have been fighting for its life in the Premier League this year. And it was. So like the thing is in real life, if you actually did that, there's a chance that some school you never imagined would be sitting at number 70 or sitting at number 66, like praying they win their last game.
I think it would make a much more compelling television product, which is one of the things that all
it would be unbelievable as a television product.
They clutched their pearls and beat their chest, and that was the Feinbaum narrative this week about playoff expansion. Although, weirdly, he mentioned ESPN's involvement on ESPN, and I thought I was going to have a heart attack. It's like what I've been waiting for 5 years.
Listen, it was amazing. Paul is the Paul's the disobedient child.
Don't
care. ESPN. Yeah. You don't have
when
to.
Paul goes when he goes off script, it's like the old days. Anyway, as an aside to this segment, I'm curious how the playoff race shakes out with the G6 because you're seeing a very even representation. This assumption that the American has a walk-in path, you have very even top ends now in the American, the Mountain West,
New
and
Mountain
the
Pac-12. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting to see how these things are judged. Yeah. And the weight of crappy conference games that you have to play is going to pull a deserving team out of consideration, I think. Maybe we get rid of conferences altogether.
God for the anarchist. Yes. I love it. You
don't
are the most
anything.
Likely.
You're in front of the logo. Don't anarchist. Say anything. That red dot will show up on your chest.
Oh,
don't
you think? No. Yep. Yeah. You are the most likely among us to become an anarchist. So I think
absolutely.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Guys, it's been fun. Ross, I know, is ready to go home.
I'm ready to go in a boat out there on the harbor.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go. It's like a chamber of commerce.
We are looking at a gorgeous tableau of there's these high rise condos on Harbor Island. Everybody's got a boat. The boat slips. You're seeing the boats get dropped in the water. They're headed out to the bay. Ross, we could catch some redfish.
Oh, I know.
So we could
go out
on the flats and catch a little trout.
Beers, catch some redfish. Oh, beautiful jet ski or two.
Beautiful Tampa. Yeah. Who says OnlyFans can't be an economic driver? boys.
Strip clubs and steakhouses.
Go out. Find yourself a John Daly. Enjoy a medium.
Yeah.
Yes.
Happy not to be there, but happy to do the show as well.
Yeah. For Stephen Godfrey, Ross Dellinger, and John Daly, I'm Andy Staples. We'll talk to you Tuesday.